as any sane person with any knowledge of policing in Donegal would know, it was very evident from the outset that this was pure folly. It was never a good idea. And despite extensive submissions made by local management at the time highlighting it, and we were told no, it was going ahead. And so we welcome that it has been decided that common sense will prevail. But we still have serious concerns about the operating policing model and how it will impact. And, you know, there still is the prospect of Donegal is going to have the reduced number of superintendents going forward. We're going to have enlarged districts. So our members, we're told, look, it doesn't really matter to us that it's administrative structures, that it won't impact operating policing. But we certainly, from our experience and what we've seen as a representative in other counties like Mayo, which is a comparable size, they are going with the three-county model, but they have the operating policing model. And the resources aren't there. Response times to calls are increasing and the public are reporting less visibility. So certainly it's a good day's work and I commend the public representatives for the work that they put in. I commend everyone within the organisation who brought attention to this. But the heavy lifting isn't over and the policing service as we know it in rural areas and how it's delivered is being, we're told, transformed and modernised. But I would be fearful for the future, so people need to keep their eye on the ball.
So if it is evidently the case that this new policing model isn't working, why are we persisting with it? What is driving this change?
Because we have an agenda that has to say that the Guards was a basket case, everything was wrong with it, everything had to change. We have to copy other international models and go down the road and follow policies that have failed in other jurisdictions. But it's just, it's like, it's political pressure. It's the train has left the station. No one's willing to put their hand up and say, maybe we've made a mistake here. Now we have done in Donegal. So the momentum is just too large. And we can see that the results on the streets of Dublin would suggest that the operating model isn't delivering more visible operational policing service, quite the contrary. So it's just a classic case of people just not listening to and not taking common sense on board and just these projects with fancy names and pie charts and infograms and all the management buzz and spin words, but really the basics get lost, unfortunately.
Can you give us an example as to how this new policing model might lead to slower response times for us in Donegal or maybe even a less visible force?
Well, it's going to lead to the centralisation of resources into, so we're going to have four districts instead of five. So the Milford district will be gone. So the places like West Donegal will be under the, all operating policing will be, all frontline units will be under the command of one superintendent. So the people in Donegal won't have a local superintendent tied to a geographical area who has an intricate knowledge of the area and who has control of all units operating in the area. So I'll give you an example of what happened in another city was that basically, because the command structure is broken down, so the crime, the detectives are under the different command of different superintendent and from the regular policing, that there was a serious crime. And for its investigation, let's say the crime superintendent needed the deployment of the uniform personnel. The uniform personnel superintendent says, well, my commitment is to the traders and keeping a visible presence on the streets. You can have personnel, but you can only have them on overtime. The crime superintendent says, well, I don't have a budget for overtime. So you have, instead of the old system where one superintendent would have been in charge of all the personnel and the Clyde were allocated. So you have the danger of silos and bureaucracy and Chinese walls set up. So that's what we see reality. Now, look,
I mean, someone can say you could arguably see that happening on a national level, you know, in that we have seen this all of a sudden now, an awful lot of police put into Dublin, very visible on the streets, according to some of the media reports today. Yet we up here in Donegal might be crying for more visible policing in Letterkenny, and we are seeing serious assaults in different parts of the county. Yet the solution seems to be unmonitored CCTV or what have you. Now, I'm not saying that two are the same things, but you do get that feeling sometimes when you're living in Donegal that the resources follow the media coverage.
The resources follow the media coverage, and unfortunately, the resources are drawn into the 24-hour policing hubs, and there are going to be less of them. So when you see West Donegal is going to lose Milford as this district headquarters, you're going to see parts of it probably going into Ballyshannon and parts going into Letterkenny. And our experience from 2013 in places like Glenties and Churchill, if you ask the people there, the modernization and the change, did it impact on the levels of visibility and police presence? They would all tell you, yes, they don't see the extra patrols that were promised. So unfortunately, these projects tend not to deliver what they're promised. And also what happens is, Greg, and what was going to happen with Sligo, Leitrim from Donegal, was there'd be an outcry about maybe drugs, which is a topical issue. And we would get these statistics would be farmed out by Garda managers and say, oh, in the Sligo, Leitrim, Donegal division, there are X number of Gardaí fully assigned to drug crime investigation. Now, a detective in South Leitrim is no good to the people of North Inishowen, and that's why these super divisions are going to be used to hide shortfalls in service. That's our perspective. Of course, we have an agenda and we have a perspective, but generally, people on the front line have a good feel for what's going on in their organisation.
We saw a recent report published earlier this week which showed that Gardaí is one of the highest levels of members per head of population, fourth or fifth, I think it might have been fourth. So maybe you could explain to listeners as to why they feel there are less Gardaí around or a less visible force out there when we have statistics showing that we have per head of population the fourth highest level of Garda numbers.
Well, we would see that the Gardaí we have are being tied up more and more in bureaucracy and are less and less visible in communities. So also we have specialisation, which is probably a good thing. But what specialisation really does is it puts guards into a specialist field like domestic violence or road traffic or drugs or crime. So they have to be, it means less Gardaí on the front line in the uniform section. So that's really what you, that'll, it would disproportionately impact in a place like Donegal, where people are actually reliant on very few Gardaí. So if you lose one or two Gardaí from a small rural station, it actually decimates the cover, whereas maybe in bigger urban areas, it doesn't have that effect. But also it means that to keep one, what we call a district car mobile, you're constantly pulling the resources in. And just to give the example of, you know, Milford District, it's the height of the summer. We have the likes of Rathmullen, Downings, Carrigart, Dunfanaghy, all those places with a massive explosion in populations. When I came to Donegal 20 years ago, there was actually Gardaí in all those stations and a presence all the time. Now they're covered from Milford and Carscombe, and even Dunfanaghy here, we used to have four guards between Dunfanaghy and Crecy. Every shift was covered. Now a lot of the time it's going to be, there's only two of us here.
At that time we were promised that what this would mean is that the guards would be constantly, you know, moving around the division and would be able to respond in a very sort of, you know, dynamic way. You'd struggle to see a Garda car nowadays. That was, I remember at the time when, you know, that we'd have, this would free up guards to be out and about more and more reactive and what have you. What happened there?
Yeah, the idea that the term was smart policing, that the guards who were tied to desk would be out on patrol visiting communities. The reality didn't materialise. The guards who are there, they're slaves to computers now. The most basic incident that doesn't require any follow-up and can't be progressed, guards are sitting in stations on phones, ticking boxes to feed audits and to produce these statistics that have been rolled out. But the reality is it's keeping them from being on the ground, out and about, visible in communities. But simply, we don't have the numbers. Like, as I say, all those outside, we call them outside smaller stations around the county, which on paper are open, have no personnel. And as we see with the recruitment and retention crisis, it's very obvious that they're not going to be a priority. And I would predict that we will see a further decline in smaller rural areas. And people will continue to sold that narrative, oh, you have a Garda service, but they have technology and communication and fleet. They'll just be coming from a little further away. But it's no replacement for local Gardaí. Community policing is the most effective policing. And we had an effective model of community policing that's been dismantled to follow other jurisdictions, which certainly if you speak to the public in those countries, they're not exactly over-enamored with the levels of service they receive or the presence they've witnessed in communities.
Yeah, you mentioned two issues which are, of course, intertwined, retrenching and I want to focus on recruitment. It seems ridiculous when we are short of Gardaí and struggling to hire them that, you know, forearm tattoos would disqualify someone from being able to police. And also, too, there are people texting in actually wondering why you can't become a guard if you're over the age of 36. You know, another couple of what many would see as silly rules whilst we're struggling to recruit.
Yeah, I suppose there's a bit of a contradiction there. We're told that this police service is modernising. We're told it's a great, very inclusive, diverse. We're looking to recruit from a wider pool of people than we've traditionally. But as you say, someone that chooses a body art is being excluded. So we believe it's possibly slightly out of step and is starving the organisation of potentially good personnel. But there has to be some sort of guidelines, but we think that they certainly need to be a bit more adaptable and a bit more agile to facilitate people who have body art. It is in no way offensive and no way intimidating.